Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Two more fantastic people here to take us through what's going to be going on our big and small screens in the week ahead. Producer Owen Sweeney and RTE Arena's Kay Sheehy. Good afternoon, guys.
Hi, good brother. Afternoon.
So, Owen, as we heard there in the ad break, Kin is back, season two, RT1 tonight, 9:30.
Yes, indeed. I've seen episode one. I basically signed my life away, so I can't give away any plot twists. So don't try and keep the twist.
What about tell us where we were at?
Well, I tell you what. I mean, we finished up with kind of plot twist craziness with the last episode of Smother last week. So this is kind of us back now in the real gritty criminal underworld of Dublin with the bang, or indeed a bang bang. It literally starts with the killing. But that's all I'm going to say. This is the Kinsella crime family, Kin. I suppose you could say Aidan Gillen was de facto head of the family, kind of the uncle character, if you like, if you want to take kind of Claire Dunne's generation, Emmett Scanlon's generation as the kind of the base generation. So the older generation, control has been assumed.
So he's dead?
No, Aidan Gillen is... Oh no.
No, it's the Kieran Hines fellow.
Okay. Are we getting into the nitty? Okay, fine.
You see, I feel I need to watch. Okay, this is
good. No, I tell you what, Ellen, yeah. You raise a very good point. There is no recap of season one at the start of this, and you don't need it. You're very quickly brought back into it. You remember all the key plot points.
Okay, grand.
Kay is absolutely right. Eamon Cunningham was the big bad last season, played by Ciarán Hinds. Yeah. He was offed. He's gone. Yes. Basically, the Kinahans now, as I said, Aidan Gillen was kind of the family control. Claire Dunne is kind of the boss woman now.
Yes.
She has basically usurped him. He was only there because, you know, someone else was detained, shall we say, at the state's behest. So Claire Dunne is kind of assumed. She's married into the family. Now, this doesn't sit well, of course, with some of the blood, you know, kind of the blood kinsella, should I say. Be very careful what family name I say there. Basically, so in the background you have, it's all about the women this series as well. It's great because Claire Dunne has taken over control. She was the bereaved mother in series one. She's kind of this boss woman now. She's running this operation with a vice-like grip. She knows kind of her control could come and go. She knows she's not kind of, there are various people want to offer it. You know, this is what happens in crime families, I believe. Cunningham, as I say, is dead. Ciarán Hinds is gone, but his drugs has found their way into the Kinsella's family. They're living high in the hog now. They're selling off all this.
Are they still stuck up the lane though with the cops down at the end? How could they ever do anything? They're stuck up a lane with the cops down at the end. And now they've got loads of drugs. I find it anxiety inducing.
There's wonderful area shots. Dublin looks great. You know, kind of the modern buildings, as you say, but very this kind of enclosed space in which they live. There's not a lot of that this time. They're very much kind of under lock and key last time with the guards, you know, keeping an eye on their every move. They're not a huge guy of the presence this time out. But as I say, Claire Dunne is the boss. It's all about her. The whole film, it's great. It's very...
The one you've seen, good.
I really enjoyed episode one. I'm very much looking forward to episode two. There's going to be lots of twists along the way. Maria Doyle Kennedy, as I say, there is a Turkish cartel who are owed an awful lot of money. Eamon Cunningham owed them lots of money. Ciarán Hinds owed them loads of money. And now guess what? The Kinsellas owe them that money. So she's nothing if not a deal maker. Maria Doyle Kennedy's in the background as well. She's great in it too. But you'll enjoy it tonight at 9:30 in RTE1.
Okay. Kay, Sky Cinema, Neil Jordan and Liam Neeson, they're back together for the first time since Michael Collins. And this is Marlowe, but it's John Banville's Marlowe.
Yes. So John Banville did, as Benjamin Black, did an adaptation did his own take on Raymond Chandler with the blessing of the Chandler estate. His novel was called Black Eyed Blonde. So Liam Neeson is starring in it, and as Marlowe, and it's directed by Neil Jordan, as you say, the dream team of Michael Collins back together again, with Ian Hart also in it, who was key in Michael Collins. So it's set in 1939 in LA. Liam Neeson is an aging, world-weary Marlowe, and into his office comes the steeliest of blonde bombshells, played by Diane Kruger, and she's full of femme fatale moves, and her lover, Nico Peterson, who's a prop man for one of the studios, has disappeared, and she wants Marlowe to find him. But Marlowe finds out soon enough that Nico is dead. He's been run over by a car outside this country club. And this country club is full of dodgy dealings. And then really, that's the basic
plot. It has all the ingredients. That's the
except that the femme fatale's mother, who she is Claire, she is Claire, anyway.
Okay, don't give away too much.
Dorothy Quincannon is played by Jessica Lange, and she's got an Irish brogue you can slather butter on. And she and Neeson have all these chats where they're half quoting Joyce and kind of flirting. I mean, it's just worth it for that. And yes, Neeson is much older than Humphrey Bogart was or Elliot Gould was, but there's something about the world weariness of it that makes him so watchable. He's not in the Taken mode. He's much more in the Michael Collins or Schindler List mode.
Okay.
And so it's worth it for him, even though the plot is like really accessible.
Don't get back to the plot.
No, don't go near the plot.
Okay, that's on Sky Cinema. It's up now, is it? And,
yeah,
and the people get it on now.
Yeah.
Owen, the big Netflix thing that they're pushing for next week is Waco, American Apocalypse. And this is, remember when we were growing up, David Koresh, a massive story at the time.
Huge. Absolutely. It's 30 years. February 1993. So it's the first year of the Clinton presidency as well. And kind of we'd come off with watching the Gulf War as youngsters kind of on rolling television. And next thing we have Waco. And then, you know, OJ's around the corner. So it really is the heyday of kind of media news stories going worldwide, excuse me. Certainly went nationwide in America on the 28th of February. It's 3 episodes. I was kind of tentatively approaching it, but they're all kind of 45 minutes. It doesn't outstay its welcome. It's slightly hammy in parts. Everything's in big white letters on the screen, apart from the title, you know, Waco American Apocalypse. They could just have called it Waco, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, that's all overcooked. And it you know, and the soundtrack is kind of everything in episode one is dun, 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 constantly in the background. It's all kind of choral music and kind of, you know, more reflective in the second episode as we go back into David Koresh's origins and, of course, the cult's origins and the various people.
We do hear
first-hand accounts, and it's fascinating to hear from the likes of David Thibodeau, who is just this kind of lost young fella, as we always believe there are hundreds of thousands, or hundreds of them certainly in America. He was in the Guitar Center in Hollywood. Next thing he knows, he's up sticks and he's going to Waco, Texas, and he's in the building that then goes on fire, as we all know how the siege pans out. He was a young fella. There's a woman, Kathy, who turns state's evidence, who still believes. They all still believe, and they certainly believe that the feds, the ATF and the FBI were not the good guys in all this, and they did not cover themselves in glory. There's no question of that. It was cack-handed, to use that expression, from the outset. There is a TV crew from the local kind of Texas outpost of ABC or whatever, who are on their way to cover what they know. They got a tip off that the ATF were there. There were an awful lot of guns, illegal guns. They were going to do this raid on the compound in Mount Carmel, just outside Waco, which is where the Branch Davidians were, David Koresh and his 80-odd, 90-odd followers. They're on the way. Cameraman gets lost. The other guy rings him and goes, where are you? He goes, I'm on the way. He asks the postman for directions. The postman goes, oh, where are you going? Oh, yeah, Mount Carmel, yeah. Why are you going there? Oh, the ATF are going to plan a raid. We want to get in the evening news and get back home. And the postman, of course, is a member of the Branch Davidians, goes and tells David Koresh there's a massive shooting. This is how it starts. The FBI kind of realize when they start seeing guns and stuff, kind of, you know, people appearing at the windows, that maybe they shouldn't attack. They still go ahead. 4 officers get killed. The whole thing ends, as we know, in a fiery inferno with 82 people losing their lives in the combat. It's Waco. Actually very watchable.
Waco American Apocalypse out on Wednesday on Netflix. Kay, I tried Extrapolations on Apple TV. And
it's hard going, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice what they're trying to do.
Yes, it comes with great importance because Scott Z. Burns, the guy who wrote it, wrote Contagion, and he was seen to be so prescient about what would happen in COVID because he made that film many years before the outbreak of COVID. But I don't know, it's like those things, I wouldn't start here, Scott. He picks real high-tech elitist groups, somebody who has, you know, there's Edward
so
Norton.
It's the night. Their future setting.
Why they think it's important is that if Scott Z. Burns got COVID so right, now he's writing something about climate change. So we should watch what he's doing. So he starts off, so it's 8-part series. And again, there are characters that fleet in and out and sometimes have a central role in a lot of these series. We're in 2037 and we start with a zoologist played by Sienna Miller, and she's running away from a forest fire. She's pregnant. we cut to in the next episode.
No, we don't need the whole plot.
Yes. But that's where Meryl Streep, her mother, gets in, you know, becomes the voice of a whale because of the technology. And this is, it's been sold on the that Meryl Streep is doing her first second TV role. Yeah. And so you have it that this woman who is mourning the loss of her mother has tweaked the technology, and this humpback whale, which might be the last whale in the world, is now speaking with Meryl Streep's voice.
I didn't even get that far, but I was lost long before that because I didn't know who are we supposed to care about here, and it's vast, isn't it?
Yes, and it is very hard to care about anybody. I think about episode 4 or 5, we get to 2 Indians who have not access to the White House or super technology. They're just 2 smugglers, and it kind of gets a bit real.
Like
then
when it got beyond the 1%. Okay, well, look, I'd say people will want to give it a go out of curiosity.
Yeah, but I'd say it would be a waste of time.
Extrapolations. That's on Apple TV. I think 3 episodes up since Friday. Owen, Oscar winner An Irish Goodbye is on the RTE player.
It is for another 2 weeks then, because it's up there. It won the Oscar. Apart from Richie Badham and his work on Avatar, this is a chance to see it for free. It is 22 minutes of your time. It is. It's well worth a look. As I say, whether you think that it is the greatest piece of cinema ever, it's probably not, but it is very enjoyable. It is harmless, and James Martin is fantastic, and it's a great chemistry between him and Seamus O'Hara, two bereaved brothers. I was going to say maybe it's not for Mother's Day, but actually, do you know what, it might be kind of cathartic as well in lots of ways to treasure the memories in our lives. Okay. And Father O'Shea provides the comic relief.
Irish Goodbye,
if you have the RT player for the next couple of weeks, check it out.
Okay, cool. Okay. Agent Elvis on
Netflix.
Oh,
I'm so glad you're asking me about Agent Elvis. Hang on. You just have to watch Agent Elvis.
The description here is Elvis, a cartoon. Go on, tell give
Can
me.
Can you
give
imagine?
Me the one sentence pitch.
A cartoon Elvis where he is in his height of his beauty. He's starring in Hollywood by day. By night and by day, he's a secret agent. And his sidekick is his monkey Scatter, which is based on a real Elvis monkey. And why do we know that? Because, of course, one of the writers is Priscilla Presley. This is her Elvis project. And she is voicing her own 15-year-old self voice in the movie. It is fascinating. It's all the scandal of the late 60s, early 70s. So we're Charles Manson, where Elvis and Scatter the Monkey come in and just they beat up everybody, shoot them. Everything is blood spattered.
Okay, so based on real events, apart from
except that Elvis wasn't a secret agent. I don't think there was Scatter the Monkey, but I don't think he could talk. And I heard he was lewd, but I don't think he's as lewd as he is even in this program.
Okay.
But it's well worth watching.
They're working on a follow-up already. Michael Jackson and Bubbles.
Matthew McConaughey voices Elvis.
Is this what the machinations happened for? I don't think so. Owen, you have seen Scream 6?
Scream 6.
And you're saying worth a watch?
I enjoyed it. It was a toss-up between this and Shazam, Fury of the Gods, but there was only going to be one winner, both sequels. But this is Ghostface, Ghost of Manhattan. Look it. We all love the Scream. If you like horror movies, kind of, you know, with a sense of irony and a sense of humour, this is for you. It may not be the best of them, but we welcome
comforting,
a lot of sequels.
I'd say, is it? It is.
I mean, it's harmless. It's good. It plays with itself. It comes from the original idea of Wes Craven and Kevin Williamson way back in the 90s saying, what would happen if we had characters in a film, in a horror movie, who realised that perhaps what was playing out was a real life horror movie.
It's in cinemas now.
Yeah, okay. That's a bit of crack. Jenna Ortega is fantastic in it. We saw her on Wednesday. She's the star of this, and she'll be a big star for years to come.
Yeah. Owen Sweeney, Kay Sheehy, thank you both very much.